I'm Connor Cyrus, one of the hosts of Vermont Edition, and I wanted to let you know that the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. We saved you some time to get it right, so you only have the good stuff. I hope you enjoy.
Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lafrac. Now, you've probably heard the saying, if you can't beat them, join them. Well, the Vermont Land Trust is employing a version of that age-old wisdom when it comes to invasive plant species. If you can't beat them, eat them. Now, my colleague Connor Cyrus recently spoke with Vermont Land Trust lead forester Peter Van Loon and Eco AmeriCorps service member Rose West all about combating invasive species one bite at a time. The conversation starts with Peter putting the issue of invasive species into perspective for us. So let's take a listen.
Invasive plants are plants that come from somewhere else, were brought here by folks for various reasons, and they cause some sort of harm, whether it's economic or harm to health or harm to the native biodiversity. And that's really a big piece of it. So invasive species are the second biggest threat to native plant biodiversity right after climate change. So it's a serious issue. And there are lots of different ways that these plants cause problems. Some of them will take over the understory and keep native plants from being successful, and others create conditions where, for instance, barberry creates a condition where there's lots more ticks and Lyme disease in the area, so that's not great for human health. So there are a number of different reasons why they're a problem.
So this goes beyond just aesthetics. This is really like a problem that can have implications on our ecosystem.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. They, like I said before, they can completely take over an understory and change the species diversity. They can change the soil. So what plants are able to actually grow in that particular spot.
Now, is that just part of Darwinism? You know, like only the strong survive? I guess, why is it a bad thing to have these species change if that's part of evolution?
I guess you could consider it being part of evolution, but they were brought here from other places. This is not their native land. And so they, as a result, don't have a lot of things that sort of keep them in check. So things like bugs that might eat them, or a really important one is fungi that may colonize them and cause their populations to sort of stay in check or in balance. So they pretty quickly get out of balance with the native ecosystem.
Rose, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, in particular about that point, being removed from their natural food web, a fact that I learned that really has just stood out to me has been with Norway maple, a non-native invasive and one of the most common tree sideway trees planted in the country is actually not supportive of native caterpillars or any really local insects at all. So it's kind of a dead end for just our ecosystem food web for being able to just provide food for other things. So it ends up being just completely removed, which is a benefit to it, but to the other things in biodiversity we love, kind of a harm.
And Rose, this idea of eating invasive plants is not new. Tell us what the goal is of your program.
Yeah, so as a part of the Bankill CISMA, myself and another really great AmeriCorps member, Samantha, we were able to run an edible invasive event where we were able to identify, treat, and eat five common edibles. And of course, the main point is to use their edibleness to encourage people to manage. Of course, we never want people to plant an invasive for its edible properties, but to use it as that connection and encouragement to otherwise kind of keep going in a situation that is sometimes discouraging.
What are things that people need to know before going on this journey of eating invasive plants?
It's a lot of things, I suppose. Mainly, I'd say get your identification down. Some of the most important things is to have your correct identification for the sake of your landscape, but also for yourself if you want to be eating them. But also just learning how many more things are available throughout the season in terms of being able to forage and eat is empowering to me, I found, but empowering in a sense that not only are you going to be able to feed yourself or maybe your family or friends when you create like a strawberry Japanese knotweed pie, but you can also then be benefiting your ecosystem. So it's really fun. I would just say one of my main points is to be sure your post-harvest handling of your invasive species is contained, because one of the most important things you want to be sure of is that if there is any debris you have, you don't want to be adding it to your compost, because then due to their reproductive potential, your compost could be spreading unwanted invasives in that way.
Yeah, because that kind of brings me to one of my points, which is, how do you make sure that when people are harvesting these, that they're not making the situation worse?
It's definitely species dependent. I'd say one of your early spring edibles is Japanese knotweed, where any time less than 1 foot in size, they are the most like tender, delicious, like blissful spring edible. And as long as you are either cooking them or bagging them in plastic, you will not be spreading them. But a fragment of a size less than your pinky could become a clonal reproductive parent, which is impressive, but again, not something we want.
And Peter, I want to go to you. With us eating these invasive plants, is this going to mitigate the situation that we have here in Vermont?
Pretty unlikely that it will. We have so many invasive plants that there's really no way for us to eat our way out of this problem. But I think where it could be a help, as Rose was saying before, is where you have just a few plants, or maybe you're just starting to see it come creep up into your driveway or into your yard or along the bank of the stream behind your house. Then you might be able to make a little bit of a difference by doing this. And like Rose said, just being able to identify these things and knowing they're out there, it's a way to begin your journey of controlling those invasive plants and trying to benefit the ecosystem around you.
Is there like a 101 guide to learning what these non-native invasive plants are? Like, is there things that like we can look out for that would tell us instantly that these are non-native invasive?
I guess the best resource we have right now is a website called vtinvasives.org, and anything invasive in Vermont is on that website. So if you see a plant that you're unsure of, I would go to VT Invasives. They've got a gallery of invaders where they have pictures of all of them, and then they have information sheets on how to identify them and how to control them. And there are other things like, obviously, cell phone apps that can help you identify plants. So something like Seek or iNaturalist will allow you to take a picture of the plant and identify it. And if you see that it is invasive, then you could go to the VT Invasives website and learn a little bit more about the plant itself.
And Rose, I want to ask, are there any invasives that aren't edible that people need to watch out for? I'm thinking of things like maybe a poisonous mushroom.
I would say in terms of some woody plant invasives, all the buckthorns, there's two, there's glossy and common buckthorn, and they do have a vibrant berry. As we go into the fall season, people might be interested in their jams and fruit leathers, and there are invasive species for that, but you want to be avoiding the buckthorns because they are actually going to, for birds, cause them to be almost just straight through the system. They're trying to get through and then spread without actually offering any nutrients. So they will make you quite sick. You can tell the bird droppings right away if they've been eating buckthorn, because it'll just be like the whole berry itself in these seeds. As opposed to buckthorn, you could be looking out for the autumn olive instead, which will be quite tasty and delicious by the handful.
And then are there any new invasive species that are really taking off that we should be looking out for, and maybe some of those invasive plants that we should start eating now to try to mitigate the situation?
I don't know of any edible ones. A couple of the ones that we are looking out for are Japanese stiltgrass, which is just showing up in Brattleboro. And if you look at pictures of it in Pennsylvania, it's just a complete carpet of grass under the forest. Nothing else can grow there. So we're trying to get control of that quickly before it spreads beyond Brattleboro. Another one is black swallowwort or pale swallowwort. That one is really hard to control, and it's in the milkweed family. So it's attractive to monarchs, but if monarchs lay their eggs on the swallowwort, they will not be successful. They won't hatch and survive. So that's an important one to control for monarch success.
I'd say right now, and this is kind of considered an edible invasive, but purple loosestrife, it is beautiful beyond belief. You can see it along roadsides. It'll be flowering from July to October, and it'll have these glorious purple spikes, and they could have between 30 to 50 individual stems. So this plant is one of those plants that is commonly called edible, but maybe not palpable, because it is high in tannins, that if you did want to pick off any green leaves, definitely boil them first. But its biggest interest is for anyone interested in natural plant dyes. I haven't really explored that too much. And if you do notice it on property, this plant can create between 2 to 3 million seeds per plant. So it is one that can vastly overtake particularly wetland ecosystems. And the simple thing you can do is, if you don't want to eat it, which I admit I have tried, but it's maybe not the most tasty of them, you can just bag it and leave them to kind of rot and not actually have that reproductive capacity.
Rose, as we head into the fall season, what are some of these like delicious plants that we can eat?
Yeah. One I would have to highlight is going to be your autumn olive. It is easily identifiable by having silvery speckled undersides to its leaves. And the fruit itself, they're going to be small clustered berries that appear red, but they are also called silverberry because they will also have silver specks to them. So they are one that you can confidently ID and kind of collect copiously. Because one plant can produce up to 8 pounds of fruit. It makes a great wild invasive edible for turning into jams and fruit leathers or being creative however else you want.
And then how do we cook these? I mean, you said jams and fruit leathers. How do we start to cook these safely?
I would have to start off by saying I am an aspiring ecologist first and maybe cook second, but I would definitely recommend boiling them because that will neutralize all the seeds. And then depending on seed size, you might have to put them through a food mill to kind of get out all that extra debris. And then it is just adding the amount of sugar you want and maybe a little apple slices, because some of the berries don't have high pectin for your jams, and apple can be a great substitute for that. And then from there, if you want fruit leather, you can just dehydrate it all. Or put it in your oven for maybe like an obscene amount of time, like 10 hours or something. So there's a lot of different great resources online and websites to look up. And I would definitely check a recipe before just diving into it. I'm just really excited about the idea that other people may be using invasive edibles as a gateway to even just exploring and connecting to the outdoors. And I go have fun with it and be creative.
Rose West, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much.
And Peter Van Laan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, you're welcome, Connor. Thank you.